Good evening. Thanks, Nicole. I just want to begin by thanking the Refugee Action Collective and Ian Rintoul and Nicole Judge, and I'll explain why. Whenever refugee advocates stand up and criticise the government's treatment of asylum seekers, the response that we get is always the same, and that's that it's working, that the ends justify the means. And the key challenge with that is that it's very difficult to say that the ends don't justify the means when you know so little about the means. We're not told anything about so-called on-water matters. Incidents of self-harm and suicide in detention aren't reported. And access to offshore detention centres is incredibly restricted. And so we really need people like Ian and people like Nicole and organisations like RAC to do what our government is failing to, and that's give us some information about just what our policies look like on the ground and just how they affect people on a day-to-day basis. And as a lawyer and just as a concerned citizen, I'm really grateful for the work that that Ian and Nicole and you all do in that regard. And thanks for having me here tonight. I've been to Manus, and I went there as part of a PNG National Court case that was assessing whether the conditions inside the detention centre are legal under human rights protections in PNG's constitution. As well as talking a little bit about that case and just what I saw inside the detention centre, I'd like to spend my time tonight talking about exactly who it is that's detained inside, what's happened so far in the 20 months since we locked the first asylum seeker up on Manus, what our key concerns are, and what international law says about it all. So looking first at exactly who it is that's on Manus, as we speak, there are about 1,200 people currently detained there. They're from about 20 different countries. Those countries include Egypt, Syria, Somalia, Iraq, and obviously Afghanistan, Sri Lanka, and Iran. There's also several dozen stateless people detained on Manus. We're told at the moment that there's no children. They're all single adult males. But we know previously unaccompanied minors were mistakenly sent to Manus, and we're concerned that that has happened again since, because the government is very hasty when it comes to removing people there. It's got a policy of removing people offshore within 48 hours of them arriving in Australia, and within that 48 hours, the age determination process is pretty unreliable. It's pretty rudimentary. And for that reason, we're concerned that some people whose age is uncertain, they have their age wrongly determined, and there may well be children still detained on Manus. In terms of a scorecard to date, like I said, it's been 20 months since Australia locked up the first asylum seeker on Manus. And in that 20 months, one asylum seeker has been killed, one has been shot, one has had their throat cut, and this is all information that's been reported, and about 70 others, at least 70 others, have been seriously injured. So we've got one dead, one shot, one with their throat cut, and 70 seriously injured. But also in that time, not one single asylum seeker has had their refugee claim finally determined, and not one refugee has been settled. Has been resettled. So successive governments have described Manus as a processing centre, and the agreement that set it all up as a resettlement agreement, but the inescapable fact is that more people have been killed than have been processed and resettled. Another significant event that's happened since Australia transferred the first asylum seeker to Manus is the Papua New Guinean constitution was amended to exclude asylum seekers from the basic right to liberty. That happened in about March this year. And apart from the obvious concern about excluding one group of humans from human rights protections, there are a couple of other concerning aspects about that constitutional reform. One is that it's actually Australia's policy that has led a former colony to whittle away human rights protections in its own constitution. And I think that's a really damaging impact that Australia is having in our region. Papua New Guinea needs stronger human rights protections. It's a country with significant challenges, but because of us and because of our domestic policy, it now has weaker human rights protections. The second concern I have with that constitutional amendment is that it's happened now. I mean, we sent the first asylum seeker there in November 2012, and here we are 18, 20 months later, figuring out the details, changing laws to try and make it legal. And what that shows to me is just how far we've put the cart before the horse. We've sent asylum seekers there in their thousands and spruiked this deterrence message. Don't come to Australia, you'll go to Manus. You know, we've used it. We've used those people to frighten away others. But just now we're sitting down thinking, well, actually, what are we going to do with them? Is their detention lawful? Do we need to make some arrangements so that they've got a visa that they're eligible for under Papua New Guinean law? The only plan that was in place when we sent the first asylum seeker there was to lock them up. And I think the fact that we're amending laws 20 months after detention began is a good emblem of that. What are our key concerns? Obviously the physical conditions. I mean, as Nicole described, they're horrible. It's inexcusably overcrowded. In one dorm in particular, P dorm, I think it was called, there was, it's a rusty old World War II hangar, and there are 120 bunk beds crammed into that hangar, and they're so close together you can't walk between them. Basic facilities, toilets and showers are in varying states of disrepair. The security presence is really overwhelming. There are sort of guards everywhere, and they're there doing a job, but it does create a very hostile kind of prison-like environment when you walk through the gate. Our key concern is the physical conditions. The UNHCR has inspected the facility three times. Each time their report used the word inhumane. Amnesty International inspected the place and said it was breaking people. Mm-hmm. And I think both of those, they about sum it up. Another concern, the slow pace of processing and resettlement, we've sort of covered that. You can't lock these people up forever. At some point, you have to process their claims and allow them to get on with their lives, and that hasn't been happening. And I think the infrastructure is not yet in place to allow that to happen. There's not a visa under PNG law that these people are eligible for, even if they're found to be a refugee. So we talk of processing, but to what end? There simply isn't a plan in place to resettle them, and there's not the infrastructure in place to allow that to happen. The third concern is obviously the secrecy. I think bad things happen in dark places, and Manus is kept deliberately dark, and bad things have happened. And I think that secrecy is ominous and a bad thing for the people that we send there, and I think it's ominous and a bad thing for, frankly, our democracy. In terms of international law, I think I'm running out of time. In terms of international law, it's the least interesting of everything that I've got to say, but I think it's important because it's something that the government pays a bit of lip service to. They often come out and say, oh, this is our interpretation of our obligations under international law and we're meeting them, and there ends the discussion. And I think it's important to be able to dismiss that with the absolute certainty that we can dismiss it with. International law says if someone arrives from, say, Syria, we have an obligation not to send them straight back to Syria. And our government says, aren't we great? We're not sending people back to Syria. You know, we're not refouling refugees, so we're complying with the Refugee Convention. But that's not our only obligation when someone arrives. We also have the obligation to not detain them arbitrarily, which means don't detain them in a way that's mandatory, don't detain them indefinitely, and don't detain them without any individual review of whether the detention is reasonable and necessary for that person. International law says we must treat them humanely. And as you heard firsthand from Nicole, the conditions inside Manus are anything but humane. And also, in terms of this question of refoulement, whether or not we are not sending Syrians back to Syria, one thing we know is that asylum seekers on Manus are not told how long they're going to be there for. They're not told if or when or to where they're ever going to be resettled. They're languishing in limbo. I mean, now they're starting to get the information that they're going to be resettled in PNG, but they don't know whereabouts in PNG. They don't know with what supports. They don't know if they're going to be able to be reunited with their family or whether they're going to be forever estranged with them. So they're in the dark. But every day they're told, you're free to go home whenever you want. And we've recently learnt that they're also offered really large sums of money to return. And so my concern is that we're forcing asylum seekers to choose between two evils. We're forcing them to choose between returning home and facing the risk of persecution from which they've fled, or stay on Manus and experience arbitrary and indefinite detention in inhumane conditions. And some give up and return home. I think to date about 200 asylum seekers have given up and gone home. And who's to say some of those haven't returned and suffered the persecution that they fled from? So I think we're not meeting all of our international law obligations, and the risk is we're not even meeting that most fundamental one, to not send people straight back into the hands of their persecutors. One thing the government also often says is whenever bad things happen, whenever they're criticised for conditions on Manus, they say, well, PNG is a sovereign country. This is happening in the territory of another nation, so take it up with them. And international law quite simply doesn't work that way. It's not geography that determines responsibility under international law, it's control. It would really defeat the purpose of human rights protections if a government could just do over there things that it couldn't legally do over here. And for that reason, the focus of international law is on what governments do, not where they do it. And when it comes to Manus, Australia designed the arrangements. They exist because of our domestic policy. Australia built the centre. Australia bankrolls the day-to-day operations of the centre. The Australian government contracts service providers to provide services within that centre. So Australia absolutely has effective control over the arrangements, and Australia is legally responsible and indeed morally responsible for the human rights violations that they produce. That's probably all that I wanted to talk about, but like Nicole, I'm happy to take some questions.